Financial capital is the money a business needs to fund its operations, as well as representing its value as a firm. Social capital, on the other hand, represents the value of relationships that allow a community to function, something that Harvard professor Robert Putnam explains in his influential book, Bowling Alone, and when he was interviewed for a Utah Foundation podcast in 2019.
If a community has a lot of social capital, it has powerful effects on the physical health of people there, on the crime rate, on the economic growth rate, on how well kids in that community do. That's what I mean by social capital, just connections with other people.
This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. Utah Foundation continues its work on social capital this year with a series of reports beginning this month and continuing approximately every 2 weeks until November. As an intern for Utah Foundation, Laura Pacheco has been involved in the research reflected in these reports. She outlined three kinds of social capital, along with ways to measure its influence.
So within social capital, a lot of researchers have built it down to three main types of social capital. So we have bonding, bridging, and linking. And within these different types of social capital, we see the interactions between people and different groups. So within bonding, we have community connections where members are within all of the same, or they have shared common characteristics. So certain beliefs or physical characteristics. So this can be ethnic fraternal groups where people are using their resources to help those within their own community. And then you have bridging social capital, which are the connections within a shared community, but it gathers people from different backgrounds so that you're expanding that information, those opportunities and resources. So thinking of community sports leagues or just being involved within local community centers. And then the final one, linking social capital, is a subgroup of bridging, which it takes people from different social classes, social economic classes, and find connections there. So people who have social status or wealth share their resources with those that have less. And these are typically seen within intermediary organizations such as nonprofits or NGOs, where you're taking people from higher social statuses or who have wealth to share those resources with those who have less.
Okay, then you figured out at Utah Foundation seven facets of this gem, seven ways to measure this social capital. What are those?
Yeah, so we've taken different metrics and kind of categorized them into seven key categories. Those are civic engagement, social trust, community life, family health, social cohesion, future generations, and then social mobility.
And do you put numbers on each of those categories?
Yeah, so within those different categories, we have certain metrics that we categorize them into. So for civic engagement, we've looked at voter turnout, attendance at public meetings, and then advocacy funds. And then also another example could be community life, where we looked at charitable donations, how often do people volunteer, religious participation, participation within neighborhood projects, and then also the funds that are going towards non-profit and then professional organizations.
Thank you very much.
All right, of course.
Laura Pacheco is an intern with Utah Foundation. Utah Foundation members recently heard two community leaders talk about their vision of social capital. One is Sylvia Castro Bennett, the president and CEO of the Suazo Business Center in Salt Lake City. For decades, it has been training members of minority communities in business skills and leadership. And we'll also hear from Bill Krim, the president and CEO of United Way of Salt Lake. The founder of the Suazo Business Center, Gladys Gonzalez, showed her gratitude for the help she got in starting her first business that she received from the late Utah State Senator Pete Suazo by naming the center in his honor. Today, it's led by Sylvia Castro Bennett.
So here at Suazo Business Center, we have advising and we have training. We have teaching and workshops. So the social capital they get is, first of all, they're not alone. So starting up a business can be one of the most exciting and scary things you could possibly do. So to know that you have somebody along with you on this journey, so to tell you best practices, to help you decide, there's just people like, open up an LLC. What does that mean? Does it make sense for you? You know, it's how do you set up your way to success? If you learn from others through their mistakes, then you actually can avoid the mistakes and start in a better way. If you learn the best way to set up your entity to deal with compliance, to find a business that will thrive and make you money, it helps to have mentors, to have that guidance along the way.
And the financial capital, you have talked about kind of a minimum level of money that you need to get a business going. So the small change isn't sufficient.
No, it's, you know, can you start up a business and grow without access to capital? Yes. Will it take you longer? Yes. So one of the challenges is when you're starting up a business and you're trying to grow, if you're looking sometimes for the first $50,000, it can be challenging, especially if you're a startup. Most banks like to lend to people that are at least first 2 years. They have been in business for 2 years. Or a lot of the time, they haven't done the right things to build up that personal credit and that business credit so they're lendable. Maybe they don't have the right practices. They haven't done their accounting right. They haven't done their cash flow right type of deal. So that first $50,000 can be challenging because also it's kind of like basic, but it's harder to get if you haven't done the right things.
Is it easier to get funding at that level if you've been through a program such as the Suazo Center?
I think it is easier, one, because you have set up things the right way where basically you are more likely to be lendable too. One of the biggest issues is that a lot of small business owners do is commingling of funds. So what is personal versus what is business? It's hard to lend to a business or sometimes they're told to deduct everything as possible, right? If you're not showing any kind of profit, what will a bank lend to you? So even though you may reduce your tax bill in the short term, it's very short-sighted. If you ever want that business to be lendable to, and you haven't done the separation, business versus personal, if you haven't shown a profit that shows that you're actually increasing in growth, then it's harder for you to be lent to.
Have you had some remarkable success stories that you'd like to talk about?
We've been in business as organizations in 2002. So we have a lot. What's really nice is really cool about working with small businesses is you physically literally going to a place and it's been there for a while. And we have a lot of success stories throughout the state, which is amazing. So we have one of our most famous, mainly because of an entity that you can see, is Rancho Market. And she was one of our initial clients. But then we have like an interpreter translation company that does business in 13 states. They're also incredibly successful, but they're harder to see. The cool thing that I think is also makes it even more successful is that we're seeing that kids are for clients. So to be able to see the second generation walk through our doors, this is where their parents came to get helped. And now that they're ready to do their own, or maybe they're looking, the parents are looking to kind of pass on their business to them and take it to the next level. To have them work with us, or, you know, a lot of them also are doing different type of businesses that their parents did. And I think that's what kind of shows our success in terms of we're doing something right for their kids to come back to us.
Well, that family connection, though, is part of the social capital.
Correct.
That leads to success. What have you seen in that area that you think is noteworthy?
We've been around for so long, and to see that second generation, to see the impact on not just our clients. So, and this is the part that ultimately, I think if we were to describe our mission, it's about ending those cycles and then to start that wealth creation across generations. That's kind of where the hard work comes in. When we start working with a client, we notice a change to that family. Little things like talking about money, for them to become a little bit more financial literate. Our clients' kids either start businesses or they complete schooling more often. One of our focus really is that to get people up that economic ladder to the simple equation of what if they make more money? If they make more money, we can change every outcome. We can change what their housing security is, their food security, access to health insurance. And we do it through business creation, business expansion, because it's something they can control.
Over the years, have you created a community of businesses, owners, entrepreneurs who can support each other and mentor each other and encourage other people getting started?
Yes, and I think it's hugely important. So besides the advising and the teachers that are here, we encourage a cohort type of learning. What we want to know, what we want them to understand is that they're not alone because we're here, but also that they have peers going through the exact same situation as they are. And it's a lot easier to know that you're not alone. It can be very lonely owning a business. So as you're learning, and there's something about feeling like, okay, I am not alone facing this issue. And it's good to be able to have people from even your same industry or different industries that are learning along with you, because it creates a community that you can rely on.
What is it that you'd like our political leaders and our policy leaders to know about your organization and the whole idea of incubating new businesses?
Well, to me, first of all, small businesses are a huge growth component of the economy here in the state. And the hardest thing is that this segment of the economy doesn't have their own lobbyist. So sometimes it's hard for them to think how policy may impact a small business, because there's no one actively on the Hill, there's no one actively advocating for small business. And this is where partnering with organizations like this, we can give them that perspective. We can also say, you know, this is something that might hurt them. This might be something that, have you thought about the consequences of this bill and the impact it will have on that growth? What makes a community, it's not just the economic impact, but to me, it's also the community impact. If you think about the neighborhoods you loved, or if you travel anywhere and you think about those places you like, you'll think of a small business that was there. And that's the part that a small business is almost like the soul of a community. There can be a gathering place. So not only is it, providing the economic impact, the sales tax dollars, that local impact because they are hiring locally, they're using local vendors. So there's a lot of that local money impact, but also to be a gathering place, for it to be a community place where people feel like they belong is also, I think, a huge component, because again, back to social capital, it becomes a place of gathering and becomes a place where people feel like this is part of their neighborhood.
Sylvia Castro Bennett is president and CEO of the Suazo Business Center in Salt Lake City. United Way of Salt Lake has long been a leader in the community through its support for the 211 information and referral system and through its work with dozens of public schools in the Salt Lake City area. Bill Krim has worked with United Way since 2004 and became CEO in 2015.
So much of the good work that happens in Utah, so much of the existing default social capital that we have, I think gets deployed in small, isolated pockets or large, isolated pockets. And what United Way tries to do is unite those efforts into a single team working on a set of objectives and measuring results together so that we can solve a problem together.
Of course, that mission goes way back. United Way has been around for years. How has the mission changed over time?
I would say the mission has largely remained consistent, and the strategy has changed. I think in my lifetime, in my experience with United Way, sort of pre-2004. United Ways were primarily fundraising organizations that built social capital to drive financial capital into many of the good social capital building programs and services in a community. What became clear to us in Salt Lake, and I think to most United Ways around the country, is that money doesn't solve problems. Money as social capital doesn't solve problems. It might alleviate the impacts of those problems. It might put Band-Aids on some needs. It might solve problems for individuals and improve their lives. But to actually improve well-being for entire populations, entire communities, for our state as a whole, something more than money was necessary. And so our strategy had to change.
What have been some successes that you can point to where that's taken place?
Over the last 20 years in our community, the effort to build a team or a partnership focused on education has been remarkably successful. It started with a strategy called a community school strategy, which is simply the idea that schools are places that not only attempt to educate our children, but they are also hubs of communities. And they can be more than simply places to educate kids. They can be resources for families. And in communities where poverty is a huge barrier, the schools need the community to work with them to overcome the barriers that poverty presents. And so 20 plus years ago, there was one such community school in Utah. Today, there are more than 50. And the movement for that type of partnership and teamwork is growing.
When you have a movement with a base that broad, is it easier to raise the financial resources?
Maybe it's easier because the base is broader, but I think it becomes what's more compelling to an individual who wants to support children and their educational journey and opportunities is the impact it has. Like the fact that a community school produces better outcomes for low-income kids than a school that doesn't have those aligned and supportive resources of the community, that's what drives, I think, giving and support.
Has the focus of the United Way mission narrowed in recent years as a result of that focus you have now on schools?
For United Way of Salt Lake, it has. Like our focus has narrowed from what some of our board members used to describe as a mile wide and an inch deep to really doing two things. United Way of Salt Lake deploys social capital in service to people whose basic needs are not being met. And we do that through 211, which I can come back to and talk about a little bit. And we try to solve the problem long-term by helping every child achieve their potential through aligned, focused educational partnerships.
One sounds like a much bigger program than the other, but tell me about 211.
Yeah, 211 is huge. It reaches every corner of the state. And importantly, it is a partnership of the three largest United Ways in Utah. So United Way of Northern Utah, United Way of Central and Southern Utah, and United Way of Salt Lake all collaborate to provide a single entry point to the vast and often very overwhelming array of social services in Utah. There are literally 10,000 social service programs, at least, in Utah. That's how many we have in our database. There are 3,000 different organizations that provide those services. And if you've just gotten an eviction notice or you couldn't make ends meet this month and you're wondering how you're going to feed your kids, it might be hard to Google and find the resources you need. Or even if you find them in a ChatGPT search, if you have that resource, it might be unclear whether you're eligible for those services or you might have transportation barriers. 211 is the single entryway into the safety net, as it were, in Utah. And our team will help people navigate that array of services to find the resource and the help that they need.
How many people does it employ?
211 in our organization employs about 25.
And that can keep up with the volume?
So it can, because we use technology efficiently. And we rely on partners, other nonprofits and organizations. The United Way of Central and Southern Utah has an additional team of people that helps. United Way of Northern Utah has an additional team. Altogether, it might be 35 folks that cover the state.
And the rest of the programs, how big is that as far as an operation?
In terms of United Way of Salt Lake's Promise partnership work, or education work? Yeah, it's about the same size in staff. And I would say the tip of the iceberg of the unified team that is working to support kids and families.
So how do you evaluate your results? How do you decide where you need to focus? How do you decide what you need to do better?
Oh, that's such a great question. We have an enormously deep commitment to continuous improvement science and to measurement. So in the case of 211, we are measuring dozens of what we call performance measures, but the ultimate result that we hold ourselves to is the percentage of people we interact with who get the help that they need. And I want to dwell on that for a minute, because we don't provide a single direct service. So the measure we hold ourselves accountable to depends on the social capital we have with the broader social service system. And it depends on the ecosystem and the environment that invests in those social services. And it's important to say that the federal government is the number one funder of many social services and health services in our state. And whether or not we can help people get the resources they need depends a lot on whether the mental health program has resources from the federal government. It depends a lot on whether there is sufficient affordable housing in a community. And I can tell you right now, both of those things are not true.
Or if you need resources for someone with the HIV, some of that is government, as the HIV program is. Much of it is not. And it would seem like a moving target to try and keep those connections valid and viable.
It is a very challenging thing to do, to understand where the resources are, whether they're adequately funded, if services are available for people. And so part of our work is to try to do that. And it's never been harder than it is right now.
What do people really need to know about United Way and its mission?
Well, I might go back to where we started and just say that Utah is such an amazing place because of the social capital that we experience and we see every day as a default setting. Utah's default setting compared to other places is awesome when it comes to social capital. And I would then say, and what we need is we need a more strategic deployment of that social capital as one thing. And we need to not take it for granted as another. There are social and economic and political factors that are fraying and severing our social ties, particularly the social ties between groups who are not very much alike. So we live in a country and in a state where it's by design a place where many people of different backgrounds come. That's to our strength. It's what's made America great. It's what makes Utah great. And the social, political, and economic forces that are pushing us farther away from each other, breaking the social bonds across people and across the diverse groups that are in our communities, that is beyond harmful. It's harmful to a child in school who might feel less a part of that school, less able to connect with their teacher, less able to connect with friends, less able to learn. It's harmful to parents who don't have a social network and might be might have a new child, an infant or a toddler that they're trying to set on a path to college, but they don't have a social support network. And Utah's good at building that as a default, and we should lean into doing that strategically, but we also have to protect ourselves from what's happening around the country, where our social ties and our concern for each other are fraying and causing people to sort of condense into their tribes and not trust each other or not care about each other as much.
Bill Krim is president and CEO of United Way of Salt Lake. Starting this month, you'll find a series of reports on social capital on the Utah Foundation website, utahfoundation.org. Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research organization marking its 80th anniversary in 2025. Our mission is to inform and engage Utahns with illuminating, independent, nonpartisan public policy research. And thanks again for listening to Utah Thrives. I'm Dan Bonas.